reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Let's see, we have our third case for the day, the Peter Ogden Family Trust versus the Board of Review of the Town of Delafield. Council, are you prepared to begin? Please do.
Good afternoon. My name is Val Anderson. I'm with the law firm of Municipal Law and Litigation Group in Waukesha. I have the pleasure of representing today the Board of Review for the Town of Delafield. Also in attendance these proceedings today is the Town Chairman, Larry Krause, seated here in the front. I'm not sure I can provide too many more points of fact than what was in the briefs. I believe everything was briefed very thoroughly. And how we got here today is basically the assessor did kind of look-see at the parcel of property owned by the Ogdens, determined that he could not confirm that it was devoted primarily to agricultural use, and decided he would ask for more information from the Ogdens. The Ogdens did, in fact, provide additional documentation and information, which primarily consisted of business records. Consequently, the assessor reviewed those business records and still determined that he was not convinced that it was devoted primarily to agricultural
Council,
use.
Council, didn't the assessor begin with the supposition that in order to be agricultural use, there had to be a profit sort of motive behind it?
To my knowledge, there's nothing in the record that indicates that he had a preconceived notion of that fashion. What I do know is the record. He explained that 5 years before he had met with the Ogdens, they told him at that time what they planned to do with these two parcels, and that he acceded to the land being classified as agricultural land at the time, and went back, in his testimony in the record was, he went back to see if that was actually happening.
But didn't they do what they said they were going to do? They planted fir trees and apple trees. They had a hay field. They built a barn. How was that different from what they told the assessor they were going to do when he classified it agriculture?
The photographs that were provided to the Board of Review demonstrate that, yes, there were apple trees planted, not very many. In fact, the photographs depict the same trees two different directions. They were described by the Ogdens as an orchard, which there are so few in number that it taxes that word to be an orchard. And the small pine trees that were planted, while they claim to be in rows, they're scattered throughout the property. They're actually planted in the woodlands portion as well, and this is depicted in the photographs. And throughout the what they call the field or the meadow, in other words, inhibiting the ability to harvest that with these little pine trees everywhere. And if you look at the photographs, which are at the record on Record 8 at 13, page 13 through 26, some of these trees are merely little twigs that are maybe 18 inches high, and they're buried in the weeds that they claim are the crops that they would later harvest with this farmer.
Well, isn't part of the point that they're going to get bigger?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Isn't part of the point that they're going to get bigger?
Well, it had been 5 years since they had been planted. In addition to that, the records that were provided by the Ogdens indicated that there was pine trees and so forth being purchased on an annual basis.
So they're not getting bigger?
The photographs that were provided to the Board of Review show extremely small, minute growth.
So this is a kind of tree that doesn't grow?
These are pine trees that are typically, from my knowledge, this is not evidence in the record, but from my knowledge, Christmas tree pine trees grow rather quickly because they want to turn them over in a short period of time. And these were not doing that. After 5 years, there were no trees that were waist high. The pictures depict literally saplings 18 inches with no spurs to them buried in weeds. So you can understand why the assessor was concerned that there really wasn't an agricultural commitment.
Are they dead?
Process.
Are the trees dead?
Some of them are so picked clean you can't tell.
Okay.
The apple trees seem to be.
Is there any evidence that they're dead?
Only from the photographs.
Okay. So if the respondents say that these are alive and they're growing them, is there any evidence in the record that would contradict that?
Just the photographs. The issue is not that they're not growing. We can see that they planted apple trees, and we can see that they planted pine trees, and we can see that they had testimony that a farmer came and harvested whatever it was on the property.
All right. So let's start with the premise then that these are trees that are alive and they're going to grow, right? And eventually the pine trees will turn into Christmas tree size, right? Does that change your argument at all?
If there has been a devotion of the property primarily to the growing of these products.
Well, what else is it being used for?
It's adjacent to their residence.
I don't care what it's adjacent to.
Pardon me?
I don't care what it's adjacent to. We tax these parcels independently, correct?
Well, the testimony was because of the locality of their residence, they're able to enjoy the meadow.
Well,
they're able to enjoy the trees.
Okay, that might be, but are you telling me that if the exact same thing was done with this property, but it was owned by someone else, the tax classification would change?
Depending on whether it's devoted to the
it's being used exactly as it is today. If it's owned by someone else, does the tax classification change?
If it's being used exactly as it was presented to the Board of Review today,
mm-hmm.
It would not equate to agricultural land. It's not devoted primarily
okay.
to.
So its adjacency to the home doesn't make any difference at all.
Well, it does if it's a hobby farm for the owners, for the Ogdens.
Hang on a second. We tax parcels independently of each other, correct?
True.
Okay. So so the fact that it's next to a house doesn't have an effect on this parcel, does it?
It can if it's being used by those individuals as a hobby farm.
Okay.
Or if it's being used
right.
for personal
so,
use.
Which is why I ask about a potential different owner. If a different owner owned this property and is using exactly as it's being used today, are you saying that would still not qualify as an agricultural use?
That's correct.
Okay, then we don't really need to worry about there being a house next door, do we?
Not under your example, but that's not our facts here. The Ogdens actually live next door to the parcel.
And so what is your concern, that they look at it and like it?
Well, they testified how much they enjoyed being in it and utilizing the view.
Okay. So can't you use it for agricultural and enjoy looking at it?
One could, correct.
Okay. And would that deprive it of its agricultural use if you like looking at it?
It would not if it's devoted primarily to the agricultural use. But
okay. So how much they enjoy it or don't enjoy it is really irrelevant to the question of whether it should be classified as agricultural, right?
True.
Now, at page 8 of your brief, you say the assessor explained that he looked at the Ogden's documentation and asked himself, does the property taxpayer carry on an activity like a business? Because that is what ag use is about, close quote. Is that the crux of your argument, that agricultural use requires a business in agriculture?
The assessor did make this statement, but that is not my argument.
Okay.
My argument is use of the property in a business fashion could be indications that there is the devotion primarily to agricultural use. That
but it's not required.
Pardon me?
But it's not required.
It's not required.
Okay.
In any event, where we differ with the Ogdens is the Court of Appeals reversed the findings of the Board of Review and found that the property should have been classified as agricultural land, notwithstanding any issue with respect to whether there was a business purpose or a profit motive.
And you believe it should be classified as residential, is that correct?
I do, yes.
Okay. So let's take a look at Section 70.32, sub 2, sub C, sub 3. The definition of residential includes any parcel or part of a parcel of untilled land that is not suitable for the production of row crops on which a dwelling or other form of human abode is located and which is not otherwise classified under this subsection. Is there a dwelling or other form of human abode located on this parcel?
There is not.
And how can it qualify as residential?
The Wisconsin Property Assessment Manual contains a provision that says once it doesn't fit a direct classification, then you look to other factors to determine the best use and the most likely use of the property. Surrounding this particular Ogden property is residential.
But if the manual contradicts the statute, which one controls?
The statute.
Okay. And the statute says that a residential lot has a dwelling or other form of human abode on it, right?
It does.
So how do you get around that?
The assessor is required to follow the terms and provisions of the assessment manual. That's what he did in this instance.
Even though that contradicted the statute?
Well, he's to use the best evidence that it's available to him.
The best evidence available, I think, is the photograph, and it shows no residence or human abode on it, does it?
It's true, but subdivisions, Your Honor, with vacant lots in subdivisions don't have buildings on them, and they are classified as residential.
So help me understand how this statutory section applies to them, too.
I'm sorry?
Help me understand how 70.32, sub 2, sub C, sub 3 qualifies a vacant lot as residential when it has no dwelling or other form of human abode on it.
Again, the assessors follow the manual that says...
I get that, yeah. So so do you agree that the manual appears to be in conflict with the statute?
In certain circumstances, yes.
Okay. In circumstances when there's no house on it?
In circumstances where... the highest and best use of the property and most likely to be developed use of the property prevails under the manual, the assessor is bound by his certification to follow that. If an individual wishes to try and reclassify his vacant lot in a subdivision, then he has to come before the Board of Review and make his case. If he were able to do that, he has to come up with a classification that fits. There are only so many. There are, as the court is aware, residential, agricultural, and so forth. Once it gets to the other, then that's where the other factors come in that the assessor utilizes to determine the classification.
Counsel, I hear the argument that's made in the brief, and somewhat here, is your reliance on the word, quote, primarily agricultural use. And I think that we're required by the statute and also by the assessment manual to look at the tax code, and I look at 1805 and I look at sub 4, and it defines land devoted primarily to agricultural use. So we don't need to search around for a different definition. We have to apply that one, don't we?
It does say what it says, and you've accurately pinpointed it, but all that does is all other property is assessed as of January 1st of the year. What this does, because agricultural land could be under snow and not available for viewing, it goes back in time to the production season of the year to look to see. The preamble of the first words of that definition, the land devoted primarily to agricultural use, means
right.
Land in agricultural use during the production season.
Right.
All it's doing is it didn't change the devoted primarily definition. All it did was say, go back and look at the end of the production season and see if the land was devoted primarily to agricultural use.
Right, right. It doesn't change the primarily. It defines what primarily is, because earlier on in that section, subsection 1 says what agricultural use means. So it puts the word primarily within the statutory definition, and I think, don't we have to follow that? Was this land used for the production season, a prior year, not incompatible with agricultural use. So how is what they did incompatible with agricultural use?
That's not our argument. Our argument
I know it's not your argument. It's my question.
As far as I know, they did nothing to change what they had done during the production season on that property.
Okay.
Our point is, at the end of the production season of the preceding year, the land was not devoted primarily to agricultural use. It just had some plantings on it
that
were growing.
Right. But if you drop the word primarily out of your argument and go back to the statutes and look at Wisconsin Administrative Code Section TAC 18051, it defines agricultural use, and certainly growing of Christmas trees is one specific among many agricultural uses, and that's what they're doing. And then it puts the word primarily in, as you have in your argument, when you get to sub 4. So I guess my question to you is, why don't we just use the definition in sub 4? It'd be the same for everyone.
It goes to, as I stated in our brief, how many pine trees do you need in order to show that it's devoted to that growing of Christmas trees? And how many apple trees do you have to have before it becomes devoted to primarily growing apple trees?
Mm-hmm.
In Chapter 90, well, let me, at 846.04 regarding foreclosures, and I know we're getting off into the weeds, so
that's okay.
But that statute refers to deficiency judgments. And in there, it talks about if there's going to be a deficiency judgment against some agricultural property. And it says if there's going to be a deficiency judgment against land that is under ag use, and in two subsections, it talks about under ag use, and in the final subsection, it talks about if there's going to be a deficiency judgment against land that is devoted primarily to agricultural use. So even under 846, the legislature has used different phrases. I would agree with you. Had tax 18.04 said under ag use, you would win. But the fact that it says devoted primarily to agricultural use, now you have to have, to what extent is the property being used for the growing of primarily apples?
And I guess where you and I are like two ships passing in the night, I'm saying I don't need to figure out what you're trying to figure out. I'm just going to use the definition in the tax statute. And if it was not incompatible with agricultural use before January 1st, that's the end of the story.
But where do you go with the devoted primarily to?
That's what it defines primarily. That is the definition. It says land devoted primarily to agricultural use means. Well, to me that says what it's defined as. So if I apply that, I don't have to get into the parsing that you're doing. I just apply the words of the statute, and if what they did was not incompatible with agricultural use on January 1st, they should be okay, right?
I understand your argument, but the statute, 7032, says agricultural land, the classification of agricultural land,
right,
is only to be applied for land that is devoted primarily to agricultural use.
Right.
And then, as to the definition of agricultural use, the statute, 7032, says the Department of Revenue can define what an agricultural use is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no immediate authority under 7032 for the Department of Revenue to define what agricultural land is. The statute defines what agricultural land is. That's why I contend that 18.04 only moves the day of measurement of what's going on the property.
Yeah, well, agricultural land does mean land devoted primarily to agricultural use. I'm not arguing with you about that. I can read it, and that's what 1G says. I guess my concern is that as I try to find that definition, you'd say don't worry about the taxing rules, and it's an argument that's different than I might have thought would be made, but that's fine. It may be the one that rules the day.
So I think that the primarily is the key here in the definitions, and we do have the revenue rules to establish that, and I think it's establishments primarily engaged in the functions that are set forth in the statutes, such as growing non-citrus fruits, such as growing hay, etc. In this case, though, isn't the true issue whether or not the circuit court imposed a business requirement on the definition of primarily that you cannot find in the statutes or the revenue code?
The circuit court did not impose that. The circuit court looked at
the assessor. The circuit court approved the assessor, gave deference to the assessor. I'm talking about what the assessor did, and the standard that was then imposed was one of somehow showing that the person not only had to show that they primarily planted, they primarily used the property for planting citrus trees and growing hay and Christmas trees, but also that they made some kind of profit. And that's throughout the record, this indication of profit. And isn't that the crux of, at least I think, why we're here right now?
Unfortunately, that all went through the record. I wasn't at that hearing, but when I read the record, it gave me pause and concern, too, because it is not a factor. But it's understandable that when the assessor received the additional documentation from the Ogdens, that's what he got. He got business records. He got 5 years' worth of business records, somewhat itemized, missing many. But in any event, he went on to review that and come back and say, I'm looking at what's on this parcel, and I'm looking at your records. There were records where there were hardwood trees allegedly purchased as part of the business that aren't on the property. And there was personal use of the property for mowing and so forth. So I understand that, yes, it's pervasive through the record about business use and profit motives and so forth, but that was triggered by the documentation given by the Ogdens. And the assessor discussed it. He says, as a factor, I don't see this as a business. And I think he did say, and I know he said, that farming is a business. I think we all agree it is when it's done.
That's not how it's defined, though, in the statute.
No, I agree. But so that's why we're here, is because the Court of Appeals said all you have to do is grow something that's listed in the Department of Revenue's administrative code, and you will then get agricultural land and the benefit of the reduced taxes. That's not what the statute says. The statute says you must devote the property primarily to agricultural use. And we believe the assessor didn't see that, and that the Board of Review at the end of the hearing didn't believe it either.
So, counsel, if this property is not being devoted primarily to agricultural use, to what use is it being primarily dedicated?
It's sitting there waiting to be residential.
Says who?
The assessor put it as residential for tax purposes.
I know that's where he put it, but why? What evidence is there to show that it's just sitting there waiting to have a house on it?
That's my statement. There's no evidence of that's the plan. But
right. So
what we have are some apple trees and some pine trees of barely existing pine trees.
Okay.
And something growing on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no indication, either through number of acres allocated to the pine trees or how many trees we need to have for an apple orchard, there's no indication in the record before the Board of Review that there's been a dedication or a devotion of that property for that agricultural use. And that's why the Board of Review refused to change the assessment.
Well, it does have trees. And trees of the variety that we say that's agricultural. There was a farmer who said that he harvested crops on that land, yes?
He did testify to that.
Okay.
And when pressed about how many acres and so forth, he gave generic answers about how many bales he could get out of so many acres. But there's no proof that it actually happened. There's no proof that he actually...
Well, no proof other than he said so.
Other than he said so.
Well, that's something, isn't it?
That's true.
Okay.
There's no documentary evidence that says it.
Does it require documentary evidence for it to be so?
No, I'm just correcting my statement.
Okay. So what we have is, I'm trying to figure out what we've got in the record that tells us what it's being used for. And what it seems like we have is evidence from the farmer that he has harvested on that property, that there are qualifying trees on that property, and there seems to be a dearth of evidence showing that it's being used for any other purpose at all. So what are we supposed to do with that?
The assessor has the presumption of correctness for his assessment and classification. The Board of Review routinely handles valuation and classification disputes before them. They're capable of doing it. The
person right.
that came in did not upset or refute the presumed correctness of the assessor's classification.
But counsel, we're looking at the basis for the board's decision, right? So we have to look at whether they acted in accordance with the law. And when I look at the record, and I can go through the record with you about what the assessor said and what the two board members who voted to uphold the basis for his assessment said, it was all focused on the fact that the Ogdens didn't show that they were in business. And the assessor said, there is just a bad feeling that I got. If somebody would look at this, they would question whether this tree farm, and he called it a farm, was being done actually for agricultural reasons to generate a profit for business, or was it being done to obtain significant property tax savings? Even if the Ogdens were establishing and developing this farm for significant property tax savings, that doesn't preclude an agricultural use assessment, right?
That's correct.
Or classification. And then when I look at what the board members said, they asked the board's attorney, does it have to be a business? And the board's attorney said, yes, there does have to be some kind of commercial interest in order for it to be separate from a personal garden where you're using it yourself. But there's nothing in the tax code or the tax statutes that requires that, is there?
Not in the statutes nor in the administrative code, but it is in the property assessment manual. Okay.
And then another board member concluded that the farm was a gentleman's farm, not a business farm. Does that make a difference?
My red light is on. Can I proceed?
You can answer the question.
It does if what he's referring to is a hobby farm. I'm not sure I know what a gentleman's farm is. I equated that with like a sideline of living at home.
You don't get your hands dirty.
I'm sorry?
You don't get your hands dirty.
Yeah, could be that, a gentleman's farm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you begin, I note that you've ceded 5 minutes of your time to Attorney Peterson on behalf of the Farm Bureau. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, very good. Then then his light will go off at 20 rather than 25. Okay, thank you very much. Please begin.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Paul Zimmer of O'Neill, Cannon, Holman, DeYoung, and Lang. I represent the petitioner's appellants, which are two trusts owned by Peter Ogden and his wife, Teresa Mahoney Ogden. This case is about whether land that nobody disputes meets the definition of agricultural use, and which also meets the definition of land devoted primarily to agricultural use, must be classified as agricultural land, or whether there are additional subjective factors not written in the statutes or regulations that also apply as part of the analysis. The phrase land devoted primarily to agricultural use is already defined in the regulations. It means land that is, quote, in an agricultural use for the production season of the prior year and not in a use that's incompatible on January 1 of the assessment year. In order to be in an agricultural use, the land has to meet the definition of agricultural use. The specific land at issue here contains an apple orchard, a hay field, and a Christmas tree farm, and nothing else. There's no house, there's no driveways or garages or other things that would typically be at a residential property. Accordingly, the court should apply the unambiguous definition that's found in the regulations and conclude that the land is devoted primarily to agricultural use.
How many Christmas trees do there have to be before it's devoted primarily to agricultural use?
This court in the Toma case, which was decided earlier this year, incorporated in the definition of agricultural use the beginning language of the NAICS, the North American Industry Classification System, that's incorporated into the definition of agricultural use. The introductory language that talks about how the land has to be used as a farm or an orchard or a nursery or something like that. There's a certain number of trees that would constitute a farm versus something else. Justice Bradley noted, the assessor in this case even referred to the Christmas tree farm as a Christmas tree farm. And there is...
But if you had two trees, would it be a Christmas tree farm?
I don't believe a reasonable person would say that two trees is a farm.
So how many trees do we need to get to say that it's reasonable to call that a Christmas tree farm?
There's no set number in the statutes or regulations or the NAICS incorporated therein that says there has to be a certain number of trees for it to be a farm.
So what standard did you use in coming to the conclusion that this parcel does qualify as a Christmas tree farm?
Among other things, the assessor admitted that the trees were planted in clean rows and they were staked out. That's indicative of farming. Also, for example, the apple tree orchard was likewise staked out in rows. And the hay farm, the pictures show, had lines in it as it had been harvested. There's also, you know, while this might not be as big as a typical commercial farming operation, it's still 12 acres of land. And all of the land is still being used as the orchard, the tree farm, or the hay field, or the contiguous agricultural forest. What the court should not do is agree with the board that rather than applying the definition of land devoted primarily to agricultural use, it should apply a plain meaning interpretation of that phrase. The canons of statutory construction say that a defined term is not ambiguous, and therefore there'd be no reason to get into the plain meaning of that phrase. And if this court did, it would create tremendous constitutional issues throughout the state. The Wisconsin Constitution, in Article 8, Section 1, called the Uniformity Clause, guarantees the citizens of this state the uniform taxation of agricultural land. If land devoted primarily to agricultural use includes whatever minor things a assessor or a board of review member can come up with to say that the land isn't really a real farm, the result will be disuniform taxation of agricultural land throughout this state, because the subjective feelings of assessors and board of review members will always control over what should control, which is the actual use of the land.
You would agree, though, counsel, that though primarily, although we can look up definitions in the dictionary for the most part, or mainly, or principal purpose, there is going to be some subjectivity here. But here, the real issue you're complaining about is the fact that they imposed a business component to it, correct?
That is correct. The way that the Court of Appeals had handled the Ogden's appeal to that court was the Ogden's argued that the Board of Review had applied the wrong legal standard. It had applied a business intent standard, and that's nowhere indicated in the statutes or regulations that there has to be a business intent. And the Court of Appeals agreed that there's no statute or regulation that says that.
So when Justice Kelly is trying to pin you down to how many trees, at some level this is up to the assessors as long as they're using the correct standard that's set forth in the statutes and the regulations.
As long as the assessor could reasonably say this is not a farm, then Right. An assessor could look at a grouping of trees and say it's not a farm. The important thing that I think got lost in the briefing that is very important here is that only the actual land in question is what's classified. So, for example, if there's a typical farm and there's a farmhouse in the corner and then there's a field, only the field itself, let's say a hay field, is classified as agricultural land. The reason is because what that physical space is being used for is a use listed in the NAICS, a hay field, growing hay. So even under the hypothetical situation where, let's say, you have a 5-tree orchard, only that physical space would be classified with the lower tax rate. So it's not like all of a sudden entire parcels with residences on them and other things are going to have this low taxation. It's only the specific land that's growing the crops.
Counsel, as a follow-up to that question, of course, when a case gets here to the Supreme Court, to the angst, perhaps, of the parties, we're not so much interested in the necessarily always in the individual facts of the case, but here vis-a-vis the application of the facts to the law. And is the issue, the quintessential issue that we have before us today, whether or not the board erred when it stated that the land cannot be devoted primarily to agricultural use without minimal sales, valid economic activity, and crops being marketed for sale? Isn't that the issue before us, as opposed to how many trees are on this particular piece of property that would justify the assessor's decision?
The particular issue that's before the court is whether the board acted according to the law, kept within its jurisdiction, acted unreasonably or arbitrarily, or had sufficient evidence to uphold its decision.
Yes, that's the standard. Now, when I say the quintessential, isn't it based on their applying an economic component, and that's the issue of law, whether they kept within the law that we are determining here today? Or am I missing something?
Well, the issue that the board framed in its petition is whether the land was really devoted primarily to agricultural use.
Yes, but then to define what primarily means, the board indicated that the land cannot be, quote, devoted primarily to agricultural use, end quote, without, quote, minimal sales, valid economic activity, and crops being marketed for sale, end quote. So that's how they define the primarily.
Well, I guess if that's the issue, I think this court has a relatively easy decision before it, because nothing in the statutes or regulations requires economic activity, minimal sales, or anything like that. And although the board references throughout the appeal that the board had concluded the land was not devoted primarily to agricultural use, none of the board members ever said that. What the board ultimately decided, there was four members, and under this business intent standard that they were all talking about, two of them still ruled for the Ogdens. Two thought that they met that higher standard, and the other two specifically ruled in favor of the assessor and the residential assessment because they thought there was something more to the analysis. One of them went so far as to conclude that the land did meet the definition of agricultural land. And under the regulations and the Court of Appeals precedent in fee, when land meets the definition of agricultural land, it shall or must be classified agricultural. So right there, that one board member who voted against the Ogdens and for the residential classification, according to his finding, should have concluded the land was agricultural. The other board member, the fourth board member who voted for the residential, excuse me, that was confusing. Of the two who voted for the residential assessment, the other one who voted that way concluded that it was not a, quote, business farm, but instead a gentleman's farm.
So, counsel, let's say that we agree with the Court of Appeals that this needs to be sent back to the Board of Adjusters. What is it that we want them to do? Do we want them to develop an assessment telling them that they must assess it as agricultural? Or do we send it back and say, well, you used the wrong standard in determining whether it was agricultural or not. So go back and start over and use the correct definition of agriculture, and then under that, decide whether or not it is agriculture. Which of those two are we supposed to do?
What this court should do is rule that there is sufficient evidence in the record of the agricultural use. In fact, there's overwhelming evidence, and everyone agrees that there's agricultural use. And so, therefore, the land must be classified as agricultural.
And are we to do that because three of the members of the board agreed that this fell within the definition of agricultural use?
The reason this court can do that is that the facts are undisputed. And applying a legal standard to these undisputed facts, the court can conclude that the land should have been classified as agricultural and mandate that on remand the board reinstate the agricultural assessment.
Was there a stipulated finding of facts?
There was not. However, the assessor admitted that there was an apple orchard, that apple trees were growing. The assessor referred to the Christmas trees as a Christmas tree farm, and that there were these trees planted and staked out in clean rows, and that there was this hayfield growing. In addition, the Board of Review members, none of them ever said, I disbelieve the Ogdens. I don't think there's really these crops growing, or I don't think there's really these Christmas trees growing, or anything like that. In fact, one board member even said, what I'm hearing here today and seeing here is that there's a hay field, there's a Christmas tree farm, and there's an apple orchard. If anybody feels differently, please enlighten me or correct me. None of the other board members did that. On appeal, the board, in its brief, admits that the agricultural use includes the growing of hay and apple trees and Christmas trees, and that that's what the Ogdens were doing on their property.
Right. But a little bit earlier, you had mentioned that it is for an assessor to exercise reason in determining whether there is sufficient activity of an agricultural nature to classify the property as agricultural use, right?
Well, I believe what we were talking about is the NAICS inclusion of introductory language talking about establishments such as farms and orchards and the like.
Yeah. So let me just put my cards on the table. I don't want to get into a position where we're trying to find facts, right?
Okay.
We just do the law thing. That keeps our hands full at that much. So where do we find the undisputed facts to which we can apply the law sufficient to conclude in your favor that we can simply direct the Board of Adjustment to develop an assessment based on agricultural use?
So in my brief, I explained how the assessor admitted that everything was growing here, that the Ogdens had testified and were uncontradicted that they were growing the hay field, the apple tree orchard, and the Christmas tree farm, and I cite the provisions of the board's brief where they admit that this agricultural use was occurring. And then if this court takes the fact that this was agricultural use and plugs that into the definition of land devoted primarily to agricultural use, the only conclusion is that it was devoted primarily to agricultural use.
Okay. Now, the town seems to draw different inferences from those facts. So, for example, at page 13 of the town's brief, it says, an assessor is obligated to make certain that agricultural use is present on the land in a sufficient intensity or presence so as to be deemed to have caused the land to be devoted primarily to the agricultural use. So, and they obviously conclude that, you know, the facts at hand don't show that sufficient intensity or presence. So they're looking at inferences from the fact. What do we do with that?
Well, I think the court can disregard that argument because looking at the actual record, there was no evidence other than the hayfield, the apple tree orchard, and the Christmas tree farm.
Right. And then the assessor looks at all of that and he says, I think that's not enough. Do we have to afford his interpretation of the facts any weight?
No. I mean, the fact of as established at the Board of Review hearing was that other than the growing of these crops, nothing else was happening on the land. The physical space making up those parcels of land was only used for growing hay, growing Christmas trees, and growing an apple orchard. So if that's all the land is being used for, and it was used in that way during the production season of the prior year, then it's devoted primarily to agricultural use as a matter of law. In addition, the Court of Appeals in the fee case had concluded that the hay field in that case was agricultural use, and so therefore remanded to the board to enter the agricultural classification. It decided that as a matter of law. Similarly, in the Toma case, the inverse happened. In the Toma case, the taxpayer had not established an agricultural use because all he was doing was maintaining the ground cover. He hadn't given the board any evidence of agricultural use. And so this court looked at the evidence, and even though there appeared to be an improper standard applied, concluded that the evidence was sufficient for the agricultural use and made that conclusion. I think the court can do the opposite in this case and say the evidence only shows agricultural use. So therefore, remand and have the board institute the agricultural classification. If this court does want to go down the road of using a plain language definition of devoted primarily to agricultural use, which I don't think the court should do, the clear, plain meaning of devoted primarily is mainly or chiefly. If you look at the hayfield, for example, the board cites the presence of birdhouses or a path. I think that's a good example of where primarily you look out at the land and it's a hayfield, and there's some minor deviations as far as, you know, a 4x4 post having a birdhouse on it. That doesn't take away from the fact that primarily the land is agricultural. If the court sides with the board's plain meaning of devoted primarily, it opens up the Wild West for assessors and boards of review to come up with any idea that they think is not proper for a farm and say it's not sufficiently devoted. Again, that creates the constitutional issues where these standards are applied haphazardly around the state as opposed to consistently and objectively under the statutes and regulations. So, to summarize, the land at issue in this case, nobody disputes its agricultural use. That agricultural use, when applied in the definition in the regulation of land devoted primarily to agricultural use, simply asks, was that agricultural use there in the production season of 2015? And it was. Accordingly, the Ogdens proved that the land was devoted primarily to agricultural use, and the board should have assessed it as agricultural land. The board wants to introduce subjectivity into these standards and regulations where there is none, and have boards of review and assessors look at other factors not included in the statutes and make a conclusion from, as the assessor did in this case, so after soul searching, or not getting a good feeling, or getting a bad feeling, or as the circuit court concluded, under the eye test. But none of those standards are in the statutes or regulations. If the court does decide that it should introduce a plain language meaning to devoted primarily, the obvious plain meaning is mainly or chiefly, not some undefined, vague other evidence. For either of those reasons, the court should affirm the Court of Appeals, either that there is sufficient evidence to show the agricultural use, and in fact that was the only evidence in the record, and that there was not sufficient evidence supporting the residential use, or, as the Court of Appeals concluded, that this business standard was applied and there's no business standard in the statutes of regulations. Either way, the court should affirm the Court of Appeals, remand the case to the Board of Review with directions to enter the agricultural classification.
Is there anything in the Court of Appeals decision you would change?
The only thing would be that the instruction to enter the agricultural classification. The Court of Appeals did what Justice Kelly was referring to of redo this under the proper standard. This court, as I was arguing, I think, should tell the Board of Review to enter the agricultural classification.
You're reducing the proceedings after this court.
I'm sorry?
You're, in effect, reducing the need to more proceedings under this court.
Correct. There's basically nothing left for the Board of Review to do other than change the classification to agricultural. Thank you.
Let me follow up with a question. You say we have one of two alternatives. One is based on sufficiency of evidence, and the other, as the Court of Appeals did, addressing whether or not an error in law was made vis-a-vis consideration of the business aspect as part of the interpretation of what constitutes primarily for agriculture use. Why should we do the former? Sufficiency of evidence. Normally, we say that we don't take cases to address sufficiency of evidence.
Partly because that's how the board framed the issue. The board framed the issue in the petition as, was the land devoted primarily to agricultural use, and what does that mean? And so the board opened that door to say, what does devoted primarily mean? And this court can conclude it means what the regulations say, and applying the facts to the law, that's the only conclusion on this set of facts. If the court wants to, you know, do the analysis that the Court of Appeals did and say that there was an improper business standard applied, then all the reasons the Court of Appeals concluded that would still be applicable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Dale Peterson, and I represent the Wisconsin Farm Bureau and the Waukesha County Farm Bureau. We support the position of the Ogdens in this property tax case. We believe that the Court of Appeals was correct when it reversed the decision of the Board of Review, which had denied agricultural classification to the Ogdens land. The Court of Appeals was correct that the Ogdens had proven at the Board of Review hearing that they were entitled to agricultural assessment on the parcels of land that are in question because they had a hay field from which they had baled the hay. They had an apple orchard that was being grown to produce apples for sale. And they had a tree farm that was planted to pine trees that they were nurturing to maturity to harvest and sell as Christmas trees. Those uses are all agricultural uses that qualify them for classification as agricultural. At the Board of Review hearing, which is in the record is the basis on which this court needs to make a decision, evidence there as opposed to what happened at the trial court or what happened at the Court of Appeals, it was clear that they proved and it was uncontested these agricultural uses, but the issue that carried the day was they failed to prove that they had a business purpose. That was the subject and the topic of the discussion and the decision, and that was what made it improper. The Court of Appeals properly pointed out that the board had a mistaken legal belief that the taxpayer had that burden to prove a business purpose. But the use value law does not impose that. As the court indicated in the TOMA case last term, actual use controls. That's the only criteria. It doesn't depend on business purpose, profit generation, or whether you file a Schedule F to your income tax return. This court in the TOMA case also came up with the correct definition of agricultural use. It's in paragraph 16 of the opinion that was authored by Justice Bradley that talked about the Department of Revenue having been delegated the authority to define agricultural use, and it did so. One of the definitions included adoption of the NAICS definition. And under those definitions, the three uses that the Ogdens have are all covered. There is no need to prove a business motive or prove profit or anything else other than agricultural use. And the definition that's in the TOMA case would resolve the outcome of this particular case. The town makes the argument that devoted primarily to agricultural use should have a subjective meaning, and that the board should look at the totality of circumstances that include business purpose, profit generation, tax status, or use intensity. But they're adding on requirements that are not in the statute and they're not in the rule, and they should not be imposed here.
One of the other amicus briefs cited the case of Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra versus Wisconsin Department of Revenue in talking about the meaning of primarily as over 50%.
Correct.
Is that something that you would agree in terms of adopting? Because you still have to define primarily. I understand your argument. They can superimpose all these other criteria, but somehow there has to be some definition of primarily, correct?
The Department of Revenue in 1805 sub 4 defined the entire term.
Right. Sub 4 talks about when.
I agree that it's focused on a temporal looking at time, that you look agricultural use in the prior growing season, and is the current use as of January 1 is it incompatible?
Right, but you still have to define primarily. It still has to be primarily for.
You certainly need to define or resolve agricultural use. And even though the NAICS criteria apply, and this is a question that's been raised repeatedly. For example, hay is an accepted activity under those standards. But if a landowner seeds and sows a golf course to alfalfa and clover and brome grass, that doesn't qualify as an agricultural use because the use is not primarily devoted to agricultural use. Or if a landowner plants a plot of corn so that they can attract deer and hunt over it, that's not an agricultural use. That's why the definition in your TOMA case in paragraph 16, incorporating the introductory clauses from the NAICS, is applicable, that it's establishments that are generally farm. You talk about being used to generate food or fiber that typically leaves the farm gate. Those are appropriate measures to look at to determine whether it is a land devoted primarily to an agricultural use.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this case with you. I want to go back to what counsel just brought up with respect to the subjective meaning of devoted primarily to agricultural use. Each and every day, the assessor, whether he's determining the classification of a parcel of property or the value of a residential structure, there are subjective amounts and factors that he must or she must utilize in determining the valuations of those properties. As well as in the classification, there are going to be issues and factors that he must or she must assess, and the manual tells that assessor to do so, to look at all factors that could have a bearing
and in the
classification
board,
of property.
And then the Board of Review has to consider that, right?
I'm sorry.
And then the Board of Review has to consider what the assessor comes up with, and then the Board of Review decides what the classification classification is going to be.
That's
okay.
Why they do go through the testimonies.
Yep. So now, do you agree that three out of the four board members would have agreed that this parcel met the definition of agricultural use, but for the business element?
I can't agree to that. I wasn't present at the hearing itself. From just the black and white transcript, I can't come to that conclusion knowing these individuals. It's unfortunate that the hearing got so down into the finance part, the business part. It was brought up by the Ogdens when they utilized the memo from their attorney that mentioned finance issues. And even counsel for the Farm Bureau just stated that in determining whether it's an agricultural use or an agricultural land, you look to see whether that product is going to the gate, the farm gate. That farm gate leads to the marketplace. So you can see how it all got boiled up into whether there's a profit motive or a business motive. And that's what they harped on during that hearing. But what that really came down to was after the photographs were introduced right out of the blocks at that hearing, that was the backdrop from which all the other testimony came in, whether it was the farmer's testimony or Mr. Ogden's testimony, and if you look at the description that Mr. Ogden gives of what's depicted in those photographs, he even indicates that this is not a real good representation of a farm. He talks about how small the trees are and how they're surrounded by the weeds and such. You can see where during the course of the Board of Review hearing, with that being the initial starting point, that it got into, I just don't know if this is really going to be an ag use property or an agricultural land classification. So that's how that happened. While the fee case that was mentioned, that was a 90-acre parcel of hay that was harvested by someone other than the owner of the property. That was the whole crux of that case. That isn't even close to what we have here. What we have here is more like the Miller case or the Cebol case. Those are unpublished decisions, but they're recent. And in those cases, in the Miller case, the Court of Appeals said spotty, inconsistent use of the property for agricultural use or underuse of the property for agricultural use precludes agricultural land classification. It's an unpublished decision, but it goes to the issue about whether or not it's devoted primarily to agricultural use. And if you look at the Department of Revenue's code, it actually says to the assessor, if physical evidence of agricultural use is not sufficient to determine agricultural use, the assessor may request the owner or agent of the owner such information as is necessary to determine if the land is devoted primarily to agricultural use. So even the code says we may have some agricultural use going on here, but does it get to the point of devoted primarily to agricultural use? That instruction in the administrative code tells me and should tell you that the assessor is to make a determination based upon the factors he gets from the additional information as to whether there's devoted primarily to agricultural use going on.
Council, what do you think about this more than 50%, over 50% used in Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra as a definition of primarily?
I saw that in their brief. I understand it primarily means you trip over more than 50% I understand how it's used. I don't know if we can do that in this case. As counsel points out, property, and in this case, it's kind of like spaghetti. Everything's kind of thrown together except for the apple trees. The pine trees and the alleged hay field are all intermingled. But if you could get to this area is supposed to be a hay field, and that's 60% of the entire parcel. That's probably devoted primarily to. We don't have that here. What we've got is this spaghetti bowl of use that all qualify under the administrative code, but the trees aren't growing, and we have only testimony from a farmer that he harvested, and the aerial photos only show that it was cut. It doesn't show bales and being moved and so forth. So you can see where the Board of Review could, in the backdrop of all those photos and the testimony that came in, said, I don't think this is really going to get there. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for an interesting argument today, and the briefs were excellent as well. So thank you so much for your assistance to the court. We will adjourn now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 10 minutes after 3 o'clock. We are adjourned. Thank you.